Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm the managing editor of Reader Views in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman with Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's December 4th, 2008, and welcome to episode number 75 in our series. Tonight's topic is Crafting Travel Guidebooks, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Barbara Hudgens. You can learn more about all of our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Now tonight we're on line with Barbara Hudgens, who is best known as the original author and self-publisher of New Jersey Day Trips. This guidebook has sold over 110,000 copies in several editions before she turned the rights over to Rutgers University Press. She also co-authored the 10th edition put out by that very same press. Her most recent book is called Crafting the Travel Guidebook. Barbara's travel column, which covers both local and foreign trips, has appeared in several newspapers in northern New Jersey. National magazines such as Signature, Woman's World, and Forward have published her freelance pieces on a variety of subjects. She's lived in New York, New Mexico, Hawaii, and Virginia, but has made her home in New Jersey for the past 30 years. She holds a master's degree in library science and has worked at the New York Public Library, Hunter College, and University of Hawaii. A former English major in college, she began writing music, movie, and theater reviews before gravitating to travel writing. It was only after she had worked with a traditional publisher and gone through all the phases of working with editors and a co-author that the concept for Crafting the Travel Guidebook was formed. Although there are many books about travel writing on the market, they all concentrate on selling to the magazine, newspaper, and internet markets. Why not, she thought, create something uniquely geared to travel book publishing? Barbara's experience as an author for a traditional publisher and as a self-publisher and as a freelance writer positions her as a unique expert in all of these fields. Wow. Well, welcome, Barbara.
Well, thank you. Good evening, both of you.
Hi, Barbara. Gosh, it's really great to have you on this program because, you know, as I was listening to all this stuff that you've done, my goodness, you've been one busy lady, and I just went back to my dreams for a long time was to be a travel writer because that would give me an opportunity to just travel all over the world. So was that pie in the sky? It never happened for me, but is it possible?
Well, that's what many people dream of, but in reality, I think more travel books are written by local people who just go out and write books about their own area, or people have special audiences or special interests. For instance, there's an awful lot of books written by mothers with kids who just happen to want to find a playground or museums or something in their own area, and they just found there was nothing that gave them the information. There are also the people who go out, and that is the specialty people such as pilots or stewardesses who work for airlines, and they realize that maybe there's something people don't know how to pack their suitcases properly, or there's some information about the airlines that people, customers want to know. So that is the basis for many, many travel books. The romantic idea of running around the world and having somebody else pay for your travels is that I think that's more myth than reality. There are a few top writers for Lonely Planet and others that are able to sustain a full income that way. But for most people, if they do that, it's a sideline. But in reality, most of the what we know of as the large travel publishers nowadays, like Lonely Planet and Frommer's, they all actually started with a single person writing a self-published book. The Maureen and Tom Wheeler started Lonely Planet after they took a trip through Southeast Asia, and they just decided that they ought to write up what they knew because there was no books about that at all. And Arthur Frommer wrote his first book when he was a GI in Europe in the 50s, and he wrote it for the soldiers. And then when he came back to the States, he decided that it's a budget book for Americans would be a good idea because there really were no budget books there. So I think most travel books have really emanated from a lack. Somebody sees a lack or a hole in the bookshelf for a certain topic. But, of course, there are people who want to travel around. Usually they start with the magazine assignments, and they go on to get an assignment for a guidebook afterwards from a traditional publisher.
So then you're talking more than possibly columns or articles rather than a specific book.
Right. Well, many people, if they want the credentials to get to be accepted either as a self-publisher or, you know, to get a book proposal for a traditional publisher, the easiest way to do it is to begin with a column. And nowadays, the way to do it is through a website or through a blog. In fact, there's a young woman who lives in Paris, and she began just doing recipes from Paris, and then she got a contract to do a cookbook, and then her second book was, it's called Clotilde's Edible Adventures in Paris, and really it's a food and wine, it's a food travel book, which is a certain category, about all the places to eat and where to find place, you know, shops and wholesalers and everything in Paris, and she got that just from writing the blog. So the internet is becoming the place where people can start columns because newspaper columns are, you know, becoming less and less, you know, as the newspapers keep shrinking their pages.
So basically what I'm hearing you say is find the need and go with it.
Right. Unfortunately, it's getting harder and harder to find needs. However, there's always, you know, one of the things that a travel writer has to think about is their category and their audience and their slant and keep up with, you know, what is the newest thing. For instance, I mentioned in my book that a couple of years ago, I noticed that several guidebooks had chapters on weddings, destination weddings. There was one in a book about Hawaii. There was one in a book about Disney World. And I thought, gee, you know, why doesn't somebody write a book about wedding destinations? Well, sure enough, somebody did in 2006. And by now, there's, I think, three or four of them out. Because that's an area that was kind of opening up. When you begin to see articles in magazines and newspapers, or you become aware that there's a kind of a new trend and nobody's done anything about it, that's one place where a new book can be, you know, arrived at. The other thing, of course, is a new destination, but unfortunately we're running out of destinations. There's always places that open up. For instance, I'm sure that within the next few years, Cuba is going to become much more open to American travelers. So before Photos and Pharma gets in there, you know, some enterprising person, maybe from Canada where they don't have the restrictions, can go to Cuba now and write a book about what to see in Cuba and get some sales out of it, you know, because opening a new territory is one place and opening a new slant is another way.
So, Barbara, you know, you're saying opening up a new slant. What constitutes a good book once you can find the slant and run with it?
Well, you have to understand your audience, you know, for the slant. You have to know what that audience wants and where that audience is. For instance, there's a book about wineries in New Jersey. And it's for people who like wine and live in New Jersey. There's also a book that's about wineries in the tri-state area. Our tri-state area is Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey. That's more for people who would be driving around, whereas the wineries of New Jersey is more for people who live in New Jersey and just are looking for a day trip. There's a book about wineries that goes several states, you know, along the East Coast. And that's more for people who really, you know, enjoy going to wineries and might be traveling. So you have to understand the specifics of the audience. And then you have to, of course, find your, you know, go to the internet and maybe find where people who drink wine a lot, you know, there are a lot of wine sites. There's even a wine appreciation guild that not only settles instruments for wine, but they also publish a few wineries guides, because that's I would never even, I don't even have, I have a list, a 15-page list of publishers, small, niche publishers, large publishers, publishers that specialize in travel books. I didn't even have this particular one because I didn't think, you know, I just didn't I had not heard of it. But there are very small niche publishers that are have an audience that is interested in that. And, of course, there are also the ethnic guides, which, like the Black Guide to Louisiana or the Jewish Guide to Poland. All of these books realize that there is not only, you know, there may be like 60 books on Poland, although I doubt there are that many. But there's only one book on the Jewish Guide to Poland, because a book like that would look specifically for places that would be of interest to Jewish people who are visiting Poland.
Wow, Barbara, it sounds like there's all kinds of dimensions for this travel writing that I'd never even considered. That's really amazing.
Right. Well, you know, it's not only, I concentrate a lot on guidebooks because that's my background, but many people do travel memoirs, or they do how-to books, which is really a big part of travel books. For instance, like if you were taking a road trip, whether you're taking a road trip in an automobile or taking a road trip in a SUV or a van or a, you know, get bigger and bigger, whether you're taking a truck or an ox cart, whatever you're taking, there's somebody who wrote a book about it. And if there isn't, there's somebody who will write a book about it. Because those are the areas where, you know, those are more unlimited areas than the geographical ones. The geography, I do get a newsletter that's called the TravelWriters.com.
Oh.
And this is a place where people, travel writers, can look for opportunities for articles, or sometimes guidebooks are looking for an author. You know, and for instance, I think it's Avalon Travel is now looking for somebody to do Albuquerque. Well, I lived in Albuquerque years ago, and there wasn't that much in Albuquerque, but the thing is, there's already three books on Santa Fe, so they can't do another book on Santa Fe because it's sort of used up, you know.
Yeah.
There's only so many books you can do on a specific place unless you find a new angle to it. But nobody's done Albuquerque as a town. Although I think they did have a day trip from Albuquerque that was done by the University of New Mexico Press. But there's only some town. The problem is, for a large publisher like Lonely Planet or Framas, they expect to sell maybe 10, 20,000 a year copies. They have what, you know, what they consider to be their, what their concept of a good sale is. So, writers who are looking for small publishers are, they really have a much better chance of getting their manuscript accepted or their idea accepted, because a small publisher would be willing to take on a book that would sell 3,000 copies a year. You know, there's enough there that they would make a profit. Of course, the author doesn't make a lot of money. Most travelers, Irene asked before about, you know, traveling around the world. Most travel writers do not make a lot of money, even the ones who write for the very biggest publishers. The people who make the money are the ones who start the publishing companies. Or, like Rick Steves, he actually writes for a different... He writes for... it used to be John Muir, and now it's Avalon. But he also has his own video, you know.
Right.
He has his own... tour company, which is really what started him out as a writer. He realized there was a need for his time. You know, there were other books about France and Germany and other places, but they weren't done in his style. And when you read his books, it really does feel like you're taking a tour. You know, that you have a tour guide with you who's telling you, oh, you can get into the Louvre if you use this side door, and you don't have to wait online. Well, that's what he's good at, you know, those little tips. And I think most guidebooks, that's what they rise and fall on, is how good their tips are. And lately, many of the largest publishers are using tips from the readers. They're getting free stuff. It's making harder and harder for professional travel writers, because there's so many people who just want to give their tips for free. or maybe they get a free book out of it. And if you go on the internet, you'll find, you know, just a gazillion places where people, they just write up their trips, or sometimes they try to make a business out of it. But many people just, they say, oh, we, you know, my wife and I went on our honeymoon to Barbados, and they give you, you know, blow-by-blow descriptions, and if they didn't like a place, they'll tell you. So you're getting a lot of competition from what they call citizen journalists now, or it's really like the old-time Brooklyn taxi cab drivers. They could tell you anything you wanted to know about the place.
Right.
Because they knew everything, you know. So in a way, it's getting harder. But the on the other hand, the Internet has opened up so many possibilities that there's two women who started, they're ex-stewardesses, and they started a traveling mama's site. And I think they're now doing a book based on their website, and it's specifically about how to travel on airplanes with children, because that's what their expertise is. So I would say like 50% of travel writers are not writers as such. They really fell into it because they saw a need for a particular kind of a particular slant on either a way of traveling or a destination. So the other thing that's becoming big on the website is these, you know, personal memoirs of how I walked over the Alps barefoot, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's interesting to read, but that's a harder sell as a book because they tend to get a little too ego-concentrated, you know. I think, like any good writing, you have to divorce yourself a little from yourself and put yourself in the shoes of the person who's reading the book.
Exactly.
And we'd like to interrupt our broadcast for just a moment to announce our first collaborative book, Authors Access, 30 Success Secrets for Authors and Publishers, edited by Irene Watson, Tyler Tischler, and me, Victor Volkman. This book contains the distilled wisdom of more than 24 guests to our show in an easy-to-read, easy-to-understand reference, organized into chapters that reflect the life cycle of your books. Authors Access, 30 Success Secrets for Authors and Publishers, lets you learn about the best practices and avoid pitfalls in writing, editing, cover design, marketing, book reviews, online presence, genre and children's books, and many other key topics. As a special thank you to we'll include a free Best of Authors Access CD-ROM, jam-packed with MP3 files from all our shows. And for more information about the book, just go to our homepage, www.authorsaccess.com, and click on Success Secrets in the upper left corner. And now we return you back to our show.
So if I want to be a travel writer, do I start off by being a blogger, or can I kind of shortcut things and look for one of these services that lists leads for writers, or what would you recommend?
Well, you could do both. You could start blogging. You could look at these services. But the problem with the service, I mean, if you see, let's say, there'll be a lead that says so-and-so was looking for an article on the cherry blossoms in Washington, D.C., or the cherry blossoms in Newark, New Jersey, which are a little bit less known, although they're just as good. Then, of course, you'll have to present some credentials if you want to get the assignment from a newspaper or magazine, and that's where the problem comes in. With some people, you know, you'd have to show that you know how to write. And the problem with many of these people who are writing the blogs about their own travels is they don't really know writing. They know how to write, but they don't understand structure. So they will go on and on about their sister-in-law who accompanied them on the visit, and then the sister-in-law had a son who stubbed his toe, and they had a problem getting their bags into the hotel, and they don't know where to start. They don't know where to finish. They don't know how to angle it so that, you know, if there's been 100 articles about cherry blossoms,
yeah,
then you have to do something a little bit different. And then, of course, you have to get the statistics. That's not too hard because people can do research rather easily nowadays because you can get a lot of stuff. are just on the websites of the destinations. So let's say you wanted to do an article or a book about cherry blossoms, places to do. You would start with an article about cherry blossoms, and then you might expand it if you find something very interesting about either a different angle about Washington, D.C., or about Newark, New Jersey, which has never had a book written about it because it's not considered a tourist destination.
Right.
That's the other thing. You have to have a place that people are interested in enough that you could get perhaps 3,000 people a year to read a book about it. So the destination has to be interesting enough, or the slant has to be interesting enough, or the audience has to be large enough. If there's only, 5 people in the United States who go in for crocheting in a certain way, then a tour of the crochet factories in the United States is not going to sell. What you really need is, it's a combination of the right subject, the right person to write about that subject, and the right slant, the right audience. You might be, a terrific adventurer, and you could write about adventuring type of travel. But let's say the publisher is looking for somebody to do gardens in the state of Wisconsin or something, or the tri-state area up there, and you may not know anything about it. For instance, when I wrote New Jersey Day Trips, I'm not much of an outdoor person, so I really didn't know. We have a lot of parks here, and we have swamps, and we have all sorts of outdoor places, and I don't know one tree from another. So I would used to, I used to have to look at the brochure, and I'd say it has beech woods or, oaks or aspens or whatever. We don't have aspens here. I think we have this what you call scrub pine down in the Pine Barrens, and of course we have oaks and elms and things like that. But I really, if I saw an elm tree, I'm not sure what it looked like. So if there was somebody who's looking for, there's about 4 or 5 books on just on the outdoors in New Jersey. There's one on gardens. There's 3 on gardens. There's one on nature walks. So to somebody do a nature walk in New Jersey, you need somebody who likes to walk in nature, and that's not me. I'm very heavy on museums and cultural things. So I could easily do a book on the best art museums on the East Coast, for instance, the 100 best art museums in the United States. And I'd be happy to fly around and go to all of them and give my opinions and all that sort of thing, because I'm good at describing art museums and art. I've had some classes in art, but I could not do a nature one for the life of me. So you have to have the right person with the right background to do a certain type of book. And when they ask for that, when you see on one of these listings that they're looking for somebody to do, for instance, the restaurant portion. Last year, I think it was, I can't remember which publisher it was, they were looking for restaurants for Atlanta, Georgia. Obviously, they're going to try, it's going to be somebody from Atlanta, and it's probably going to be somebody who's already writing restaurant reviews, either for a magazine or an Atlanta newspaper, or it might be somebody living out in the suburbs. But it has to be somebody who's fairly cognizant of what's going on in that particular area, or who knows the ropes if it's a person who's doing a book on biking or hiking or something like that. So that's where your basic credentials is often what you know about and what you do best. And then from there you can, just stretch out and go into, your destination.
Gosh, there's just so much to this, Barbara. And obviously when the people have the, all that together and know what direction and slant they're going to go on to, then the next thing, of course, is to, according to what your book is called, Crafting the Travel Guidebook. And at this time what I want to do is just to tell our audience that they can go to your website, and it's Crafting the travelguidebook.com, crafting the travelguidebook.com, and as I go here to this page, the home page, you've got the book here, and the subtitle is How to Write, Publish, Sell Your Travel Book. So, Barbara, how did you come up with this book?
Well, I had, as I as Victor mentioned in the introduction, I had been writing New Jersey day trips for many years. And I, in the middle of the 90s, somebody from a well-known publishing company, not the one you would think of immediately, but it's a fairly reputable publishing company, wrote a book about New Jersey, and he plagiarized about 20% of his book was right out of my book. And it turned out that about 60% of his book was from three other books about New Jersey. In other words, he just copied his whole book. And I went to a lawyer and said I wanted, you know, to sue. And the lawyer said, well, how can you prove that, you know, that he stole it from you? After all people who write about a certain, you know, if you're writing about New Jersey, you're all getting the basic information from the same sources. So how can you prove that he actually took your stuff? So I said, well, I gave him a few quotes that were very specific to my book, and he said, okay, I'll take the case. But he told me I had to do all the work. You know, I had to find out where the paragraphs and the sentences and everything were similar. So I actually went through, I deconstructed this guy's book. I went through it line by line. And then I went through not only my book, but the three other books that he stole from. And one of the things I noticed is how the different, you know, your opening paragraphs, how different people approach the same subject. And I just started writing down the different paragraphs and the different ways that people describe the same subject matter. And in my, we never went to court. We settled out of court, and it was for a very small sum. But while I was doing this, I was imagining in my mind this courtroom, and I'd be on, you know, in the trial, and I'd be the witness, and I would have to explain to a jury, which probably knew nothing about writing, how one constructs a paragraph and how, you know, where you begin in writing about trying to describe something and all the different ways of going through a description, whether you start in medias res, whether you start with a general concept, whether you start with action. And out of that, I sort of had a concept of all the different ways of how one approaches travel writing. And then the second motivation was when I had after I sold my book to Rutgers University Press, I had a co-author who was more a photographer, but we wrote half of it, and he didn't put any color into any of his descriptions. Not only that, but he took the color, and we edited each other's stuff. And I started to think, what do you really need for travel writing? And I started writing Travel 101, and I thought, you know, I told him what I thought you should have for descriptions. And one of the things I said was, you know, the first thing I thought of was color, because he never had it. I said, I remember I said something about he didn't put anything about the ocean. He said, well, the ocean's blue. Everybody knows it's blue. So in my description, I say, one of the things I say is that color is the sea blue, azure, gray, turquoise, green with algae, or almost as brown as the sand. Light, whether it's the neon lights of a casino or the morning light on desert sand, light plays a part in the physical description of things. Texture, rough concrete, burnished wood, silk fabrics in a clothing shop, the brass rail of a ship are all textures that bring the experience home to the reader. Smell, fresh bread in the bakeries, the sea salt, and diesel fumes on highways, and sound. Did the ferryman blow a whistle? Even in a short piece, you can mention the clink of coins at a casino or seagulls squabbling over a piece of bread on the beach. So those are the things that we would argue about. I mean, for instance, I had in my write-up of Atlantic City, because I had been doing this for, you know, I was up to the 10th edition by this time, I repeated a lot of the same material, and I had something about the clink of coins in the casino. And he took it out, and I said, why? And he said, well, now they don't have the coins anymore. They now have this little tape that comes out. And it's true, they did. He was, you know, keeping it up to date, which is correct. But I said, well, if you take out the clink of coins, you have to put something else in, you know, like the bells and whistles that go off when you, you know, when you win on the machines. the interesting thing that's happened, I was down in Atlantic City a couple of months ago, they have actually put an artificial sound of coins into the slot machines now because people wanted to hear that sound. It made them feel that they were winning, you know. It'd go clink, 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 clink. So anyway, this was the other motivation for writing this. Is I just felt that people who write about travel, you have to appeal to the senses. It just seems like it's the most obvious thing in the world, and yet not everybody thinks of it. Many people just think of their own, you know, how they feel, and they're so happy, or they talk about the scenery was overpowering, overwhelming, or fantastic, or wonderful, you know. And it's not specific enough. I think that's one of the basics of travel writing is doing very specific description.
So, Barbara, gosh, you've really put in a lot of work into this book. And am I correct in saying that you self-published it?
Yes. This book, The Crafting of the Travel Guidebook, was self-published, but I self-published it in a different way. I used Lightning Source, which is a print-on-demand technology, because that way you don't have to print up thousands of books and have them in your garage. With the New Jersey book, my first edition, it took me 2 years to sell 2,000 copies. Then after it got started, it was selling 5,000 or 6,000 copies a year. So I knew how much to print up. But with a new book, and specifically a book in which you don't have an audience, a ready-made audience, with the New Jersey book, I wrote it because there was no decent New Jersey book around. Now there are several, but there were very few at the time. So I knew there were people who were looking for places to go in and around New Jersey. So there was a ready-made audience. It was mostly getting it into the bookstores at that time and getting it also into non-bookstores, which I think for travel writers is an important thing because many travel books appear in other places also. For instance, one of the most popular places that my book sold was in the a national park that is nearby. It's called Washington's Headquarters. And I actually had, for a while, I had it in the in Philadelphia in the main historic area where they have a visitor center there, which is great. If you can get a book into, for instance, the Smithsonian or like the Air and Space Museum, they get 2 million visitors, and everybody who visits buys a book. So if you can get a book about air travel or whatever, you know, into one of those places, you have an audience that's going to come in and buy it. So, whereas if you get a book into a regular bookstore, you've got, you know, thousands of other titles that are competing against you, and they're all on different topics. So the more specific a store you can find, the better off you are. There's one guy who does a fishing guide to places in New Jersey, and he gets it into the fishing stores. So he does much better there than in the regular stores.
Gosh, Barbara, you know, this we could go on and on. You are so full of information, obviously. Well, with 30-some years in this industry, there's the reason why you have this much information. And I would like to just have the listening audience go to your website and look around. You also have a blog, and, of course, they can buy your book. I'm sure that we have a lot of inspired people that would like to go ahead and check into this and just see if it's really viable and find a need. Thank you so much for being with us today, Barbara, and giving us all your insights. And Jeff, it's been great. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
Yes, you're very welcome. And while I was looking around and seeing we don't have a decent travel guide for Ann Arbor, so I might just have a project ahead of me.
Good idea, because it's an interesting town.
It is. Okay, folks.
I know. I have a cousin there.
Great.
Okay.
You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back on the air December 11th, 2008, when our topic will be Screenwriting 101, and our guest who will be joining us is Alexis Nicky. You can learn more about all of our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you about tonight's show. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated, and Loving Healing Press.
Temporary Views with Irene Watson, Austin, Texas, Maine, tonight.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all safe travels.